Good morning, everybody. Good morning. So my name is Guru Venkatraman. Today we'll be discussing at depth about BizTalk Server. How many of you here are completely new to BizTalk Server? Good. So today we will take a little bit of introduction about what BizTalk Server is in general, which may be kind of a little bit of a repetition for some of you who are seasoned users of the product. And we'll also go in depth about what's new in BizTalk Server 2013. And we have another about 6 more sessions related to BizTalk Server in this decade. So we will be covering various aspects of integration in general, BizTalk services, and this is specifically about BizTalk Server on-prem product. So if you have any questions, please keep it to the end. We have about 10 minutes of Q&A session, so we can cover it in one go. So what is BizTalk Server? So BizTalk is a middleware product that allows connecting different types of applications within an enterprise. That's at a very high level. That's pretty much what it is. If you look at the bottom, I have some different types of data sources, be it a CRM source, be it a ERP source, or SQL database, an Oracle database, different types of data sources. And at the very top of it, you have different types of consumers. Could be from consuming it from a portal, or could be consuming it from a SaaS application, or could be consuming it from a mobile application, or could be just consuming it from a regular web application. So there is disparity in the type of data sources, and there is disparity in the way that it is being consumed. And how do you broker it in between? So, and what is the need for that brokering? So brokering as in, like, let's say, think of a scenario where I have part of my data, of my orders data, and as well as my customer data in 2 different sources. Usually, your customer information system is stored on a CRM system, whereas your orders information is stored on a SAP or a SQL system. So how am I going to bring the 2 together for a given scenario? A given scenario could be like, I want my field personnel to be able to access it from their mobile devices or from their web application, wherein he wants to know what are the orders relevant to this particular customer. Out for that time, he just wants to know one that little glimpse of it. But at the same time, he could have some product marketing team or product management team who wants to have much more detailed analysis of where are these customers coming from, what are the type of orders a given customer is placing, and those kind of stuff. So that means the same type of data is now being presented in different ways to different people. So now the challenge is around not just about getting the data, it is about move forward. It's also about providing the right access to the right set of people. So if I'm accessing that same information as a field personnel, I have a particular view of that information. If I'm accessing it as a product marketing person or a product planning person, I have a different set of view. So you need to manage that access control. You need to manage the type of data that is being presented and the format of the data that is being presented. And you also need to maintain an audit track record of who accessed what, when, and how. So that is where the need for that integration comes in between. So the type of data that you'll be accessing continues to change. So today you may be using, let's say, a small access database. Tomorrow you may be going to a SQL database. In a year from now, you may be going to an SAP system. So the data source kind of keeps on changing over a period of time. Same way the type of consumers who are accessing the data also keeps changing. So you cannot afford to keep changing your application every time when things go wrong like this or change like this. So that's where an integration broker comes in between. So if you look at this slide, what we're talking about is like there are various different types of consumers at the top, like SaaS being software as a service. And at the bottom, you have got business processes. I'm not only talking about data sources. I'm also talking about business processes. So business process as in, like, let's say, how should I be processing my purchase order? There's a sequence of steps that you want to follow for that. So how do I expose this business process itself as something that can be consumed by a mobile application? How can I expose my order processing system as something that can be consumed by a web application? So you should be able to expose all of these things irrespective of the consuming format. So that's where that middle tier normalization comes in between. So this is at a high level, a very 30,000 foot view of what BizTalk server does at an architectural level, I would say. So what you have in between is the BizTalk messaging engine. So it's a pub sub engine. That means you are publishing something and somebody is subscribing to that. So the engine itself does not really know what kind of data that is being processed. It is not expected to know. So the engine says that, okay, somebody is going to publish some information, like let's say a purchase order, and there's going to be a downstream subscriber to that information who says that I'm interested in this purchase order. All that the information that the engine has is that I'm processing a purchase order coming from source A, going to source B. Think of it like more like a post office. Post office knows that I'm delivering something, but it doesn't really know the contents of what it is delivering. It knows from who it received, it knows to who it is being delivered, and it knows the package name, but it doesn't know what's inside the package. So that's pretty much how BizTalk messaging engine works. So it has information about what kind of, from what source did I receive and to what destination am I delivering. And it also has information about what is the type of data. I don't know what the data itself is. Right? So that is the messaging engine. So if you look at it from the bottom stack, I have various data sources coming in. It is coming either from SAP or it is coming from RFID sources or coming in from an LOB system. So various types of data is coming in. And there are various subscribers at the top, one of which is called an orchestration, the other one could be a rules engine, the other one could be some end customer. So let's talk about those individual components there. Orchestration, as the name suggests, it is a workflow orchestrator, wherein you are defining your sequence of steps that you want to execute for your business process. Think of it like a regular workflow. But within the workflow, you have the capability of calling external services, you have the capability of calling external components within a transactional scope. So if things go wrong, like let's say I called an external web service and the web service timed out for whatever reason. So I should be able to roll back and come back to a previous known good state. So those are all things that is implemented already in that orchestration engine. So as a developer or as a business process designer, you are only defining your business flow. You really don't have to worry about how do I handle this transaction failure, how do I handle this connection failure, how should I worry about access control for that endpoint. All of those things are taken care of by the engine. So that's part of orchestration. And then there could be scenarios where you would want to be able to provide dynamic business rules that that could change due to some changing business scenarios. For instance, for the week of Christmas, you want to give a 10% discount to all your customers who have bought product greater than $10,000 in the past year. That means you should be able to look up to a data source to identify all those customers who have brought product for greater than $10,000 and see what is the current week. Is it the week of Christmas? If it is, then apply a 10% discount on any future purchase that the customer makes. So that means this is a very fluid scenario where you are telling that 10% is a variable. Customers greater than $10,000 is another variable. The week of Christmas is another variable. So the rule itself says, give X percent discount to Y type of customers during Z season. That is the rule. So the X, Y, and Z are all three variables. So you should be able to define those X, Y, and Z depending on your business conditions. You could say instead of $10,000, I could make it $5,000. Instead of 10%, I could make it 20%. Instead of Christmas, I could make it New Year Eve. So I should be able to change those things. So based on what this business rule says, I should be able to change my business flow also downstream. So this business rule, who is defining that? Obviously, it cannot be a developer who is defining a business rule. It is coming in from a business administrator or somebody at a CXO level defining what my business rule should be. So he needs to have a different interface and not have to redeploy his solutions every time in a business rule change. So the business rule is an external engine that acts as part of BizTalk processes. Then alongside, on the right-hand side, you will also see B2B, and then there is hybrid connectivity. So the ability to process any type of message from any source and being able to communicate in any protocol, what can you achieve? One of the most common use case scenario is business-to-business integration using EDI standards. EDI is an industry standard across multiple industries that's been in use for well over 60 years now. And BizTalk, being an integration broker, ships with all of the known industry standard schemas for various industries like healthcare and for insurance and for banking. So it comes with a variety of schemas, around 12,800 plus schemas that BizTalk ships out of the box for EDI messaging. So EDI also says that it's not just about schemas. There are also trading partner agreements, and there are specific messaging protocol that you have to follow when you are dealing with specific industry standards. So like, let's say there is an AS2 protocol that you'll have to use for dealing with certain trading partners. And if you're dealing with healthcare, that is HL7 plus HIPAA specific regulations. So those kind of things, as an end user, you don't have to know about the intricacies of how EDA works behind the scene. BizTalk has a very rich EDA engine built into it, wherein you are just defining your trading partner agreement. From there on, BizTalk takes over. So that's one scenario. Another scenario is ability to connect to hybrid applications that are hosted on the cloud. So in between, you see that firewall. So now I have some certain set of data that is sitting behind my firewall on my enterprise, like let's say my SAP data. I will not be able to expose my SAP data to my external application, like let's say a web application or a mobile application. And I don't want to be poking holes through my firewall. How do I make that possible in a secured manner, and I should still be able to audit and regulate and monitor it? So what BizTalk does in between is exposes your on-prem systems as a simple messaging protocol. So it has a, think of it like a web service. So now I have that previous scenario where I wanted to expose my customer orders. So it exposes itself as a customer orders dot service, a web service. And instead of somebody else requesting, which is what a firewall generally prevents, I actually do a post. So this is called a service bus relay. We will see that in a demo. So through that relay concept, BizTalk is actually posting something to that other endpoint, at the relay endpoint, saying that, hey, I am around here. So when somebody hits the relay endpoint, so the end customer just sees that, okay, it's an internet endpoint. He doesn't have to know behind the scene that there is BizTalk, there is SAP, or there is a firewall, all of those things. He just sees it as a regular web service. And that's one thing that that's new to BizTalk 2013. Earlier, we could do this through a local host on within an enterprise. Now, in 2013, you can take it up to the internet level. So then let's also take a quick view about what is BizTalk Server's history, and where did it come from, and why should an enterprise care about this? BizTalk is one of those products which has been in the market for well over 12 years now. The first version of BizTalk, we'll see it in the next slide, is around, it started off in the year 2000. So this is in the 8th release of the product. And it's one of these, probably the only product, I would say, which has had zero security bugs in 12 years of its history. For somebody who is being an integration broker that talks with various types of systems, be it Java systems, be it Microsoft .NET-based systems, be it Oracle-based systems, or be it SAP-based systems, it connects with various of enterprise systems, and it has not had a single security fix. In all of its history, the legacy that it carries is like it's extremely backward compatible. I can take an application that was created way back in 2004, 2006 days, and for all practical purposes, it works pretty much the same way in 2013. So even though everything around it has changed, your SQL database has changed, your Windows has changed, your Visual Studio has changed, your .NET framework has changed, but still, to maintain that kind of a compatibility, it is very important for enterprise customers, because there are still lots of enterprises who still use Windows NT, and Windows XP and Windows 2000. I cannot expect an enterprise to move at the same speed that Microsoft moves. Right? Microsoft is already working on vNext of Windows. The current Windows was launched 2 weeks ago. So, Microsoft moves at that speed. It's not possible for an enterprise to keep up at that speed. Right? So there are still applications which are like 5-6 year old applications. How do we make sure that you have that kind of compatibility? So that backward compatibility is a very important criteria for middleware product. And the zero message lost across multiple industries, that's a very key aspect here, because BizTalk processes very mission-critical application data, like let's say pulling data from your SAP or pushing data into your production shop floor management systems and those kind of things. These are mission-critical data. Some of my customers are the world's largest healthcare providers. So that's real, literally a life and death situation if you miss a message there. There are some of the customers who plan for infantry movement. So those kind of messaging scenarios, getting that message delivered on time to the right person at the right place in the right format, all of these things matters. If things fail for whatever reason, you need to have a way of repudiating it. Like, how do I recoup from this scenario? How do I make sure that why did it fail? All of this auditing and logging is so critically important in many of these mission critical situations. So when I claim zero message loss, that's pretty much where we say the reliability of the server is so high that even though if the downstream system is literally dead, like it's not available to reach, I can keep it in a state where you deliver it as and when the system is available. You wake it up from the grave and deliver it. Something like that. So that kind of zero message loss for over 10 years in all of its industries, be it healthcare or be it Swift or be it RosettaNet or be it aeronautics, in all of the industries it has achieved that kind of a thing. And it is scalable by design because it was as a middleware broker, we cannot take any guess around how is my workload going to be. My downstream system could be slow or my upstream system could be slow. Right? SAP says I may be available only between 3 to 5 in the evening. So you need to store those messages somewhere as incoming orders come in. Or the upstream system could be slow while the downstream system is too fast. So you should be able to scale either way. So you cannot come up with an out-of-the-box scenario and say, hey, okay, I can do X and I can do only X. So you should be able to scale on demand. So by design, Bistrock is meant to scale by scale on demand with additional host instances. And so the availability is not confined to n number of hardware as in Windows clustering. So clustering is not a requirement for high availability. So as long as your backend SQL database is available, Bistrock is available. So this is a quick snapshot of the various releases. As I said, the first release came out in 2000. And by 2013, we have had about 8 releases. Historically, the product has had between 18 to 24 months of a release cycle. So the most of the releases in Bistrock, if you look at it, it looks very incremental. It doesn't look like an earth-shattering change. And there is a very strong engineering reason for that, being one of the things being backward compatibility being a core pillar of it. So we cannot afford to go and change things rapidly or rampantly because you need to maintain that backward compatibility. But in spite of it, there has been lots and lots of changes. The server that we saw in 2004 or 2006 has got nothing to do with what you see in 2013, excepting for the fact that it's still Bistrock server. So the functionalities have significantly changed while still retaining its core principles. And going forward, we intend to maintain the same rhythm of 18 to 24 months. Depending on market requirements, it might change, but that's our current intent. So let's also take a quick look at some typical use cases of when people would use Bistrock server and why should they care about it. Typical use cases is about defining your business workflow. So Bistrock provides a very simple to use graphical designer where you just drag and drop things while defining how your business process flows. So there is no need for defining complex C# code or C++ code while trying to identify transactional scope and transactional consistency, access control, identity control, all of those things. It is a very graphically intuitive environment. And as we also saw about that was exposing existing process, the complete process itself, as a simple REST interface. I think you will be able to see that more in the demo where we will show that exposing a complete orchestration as a REST interface. And the second aspect where we have the largest customer base is around B2B scenarios. So trading partner management is a key aspect for any B2B scenario, like let's say B2B is in business-to-business scenario. Like let's say if you are Ford and you want to deal with some 10,000 of your dealers. So it's a business-to-business transaction between Ford headquarters and Ford dealership. So how am I going to manage those 10,000 dealerships? So there is going to be an SLA there, and they're saying that, okay, if I'm going to deal with a dealer in Michigan, how do I deal with that dealer versus somebody in Wisconsin? So there could be two different service level agreements. There could be two different trading partner agreements. So those are scenarios which is out of the box. Bistock provides an interface for defining your trading partner agreements and managing them and also executing them. So that's one area where we have a very large Bistock customer base is B2B. And it's also a product that is very widely used across many of the financial, healthcare, and logistics industries. The reason being, Bistock out of the box provides support for Swift messaging, which is one of the most widely used format in the banking industry for any payment systems that you use or any transaction systems that you use. Swift is a standard, and Bistock provides annual updates for all of those messaging schemas that Swift provides. So every year we come up with a message pack that supports the latest Swift standards. And we also continue to maintain the latest schema updates for HL7, which is the most widely used in healthcare, and for RosettaNet, which is the one used in the logistics industries. And rich tooling, Bistock provides, as we said about in business rules, for non-developer personas to be able to define their business rules and deploy it without having to go through a development process. So the tooling experience there is quite rich. And another important aspect is about, because Bistock knows what type of message it is receiving, from whom it is receiving, which business process derived this message and all of those things, it has contextual data about your business process. So now I can know, tell me the number of customers who bought product X during this year for greater than $10,000. So that's a query that you are querying across multiple data systems. You are asking for the type of customers, the number of customers, the region from where that customer came in, and then you are getting into your orders database to map it with your products and then map it with your pricing table. So one query, we say, okay, show me all the customers who bought product X greater than $10,000 during this season. So this will be cutting across multiple backend systems. So because Bistock already had this business process, which was getting all this information, now I can query that one source of truth and say, okay, show me this information and alert me when a customer buys something or doesn't buy something during a given time. So that is something like you are getting an insight into your business process without having to define anything differently. Right? You already have the data. You already have that business process defined. You can get this additional insight because you're mining that information. And Bistock also currently provides a very wide range of connectivity to various LOB systems. So it has one of the widest range of connectivity to on-prem LOB systems. We are ranging from Siebel, PeopleSoft, JD Edwards, SAP systems, SQL servers, Oracle servers, IBM host systems like AS400 systems, Informix systems. So it has a very wide range of LOB connectivity. On top of it is based on an adapter framework, which is very widely extensible. So there are lots of third-party partners who have created adapters based on this adapter framework for very specific use cases like Lawson system or Epic system, which is specific to healthcare industry. So partners have come in and created these adapters. And out of the box itself, Bistock provides a very wide range of connectivity to LOB systems. And apart from LOB systems, it also has connectivity to a wide range of protocols. Something as simple as a file or as complex as SFTP or HTTPS. You name a protocol, it has a connectivity for that. So that's the typical use case. And we will also take a quick look at the customer base where Bistock is predominantly used. So I've just taken a quick snapshot of the range of industries which use Bistock very heavily, starting with banking. We introduced the Swift adapter for Bistock way back in 2006. Support for Swift messaging. So that's one of the most widely used in the banking sector today. Some of the world's largest banks still continue to use that. Even though they haven't upgraded Bistock, they continue to use the latest message packs, and it still works for them. So there are lots of banks here based out of Spain also. They use still 2006 or 2009 versions of Bistock with latest swift message pack. It still works for them. And insurance industry is another one where, especially with HIPAA compatibility, in the US it's a big deal, where it's a mandate to be mandate for most of the hospitals and payment systems, payment processors to be HIPAA compatible. So Bistock comes out of the box with HIPAA schemas, all for 5010 and 5030 schemas. So if you are a payment provider or if you are one of those payment processors, you just need to use those schemas and not have to worry about compatibility with the insurance schemas. So that's one of the very widely used scenarios. And healthcare, especially with this release of 2013, we will see for that in what's new in 2013. Healthcare is one industry which has significantly adopted Bistock in the past year. A couple of reasons for that. One of these reasons is we have significantly improved performance for that adapter, which is used in healthcare. Healthcare is an adapter called MLLP. It's an adapter based on the basic TCP, but it is specific to healthcare. So the performance requirements there were significantly stringent because of the rapid growth of that protocol. And 2013 significantly made improvements there, and that has led to a major adoption there. Actually, healthcare moves way ahead of banking in number of customers, actually. And logistics is another area where Bistock has seen a lot of success. Logistics could be, it's a very wide and open term. It could be something as generic as, like, let's say, FedEx or UPS, or as complex as something like shipping. Both mean logistics. So, and Bistock plays in both the spaces. Logistics is important because there is really nothing defined saying that these are the steps that you have to go through for every package. It's nothing like that. In case of UPS, for instance, they get different types of package requirements, and they have a very wide variety of customers that they have, like let's say some 25 different types of customers that they classify, saying that, okay, they're all the way from Premier to somebody who pays $5. So for all of these things, you need tracking, you need the ability to identify who shipped it, and you need to identify what type of package it is. All of those things are still requirements, but they have different packages. So that's a very large Bistock customer. And the government is one area where, at least in the past 3 years, I've seen a lot of adoption going on with many of these e-government initiatives going around. Because at the end of the day, if you look at the government department's thing, it's a pretty well-defined schema. Like, let's say, NIEM is one of these standards that is very widely used in the US, National Information Exchange. It's a standards body that has defined how various departments within the government interact, like, let's say, the law and order or education, those kind of stuff. It's the government defines those schemas. So most of them are almost 90% of them are standard XML schemas. There's nothing different about that. So Bistock supports those customers. That's a very rapidly growing area. Another one is retail, as we spoke about, because it's EDI is a big deal there, and retail supports point of sale scenarios or B2B scenarios. So those are some of the common scenarios. And for manufacturing, some very large customers, as big as Boeing or Toyota and those customers, they all use it for shop floor management or material management or inventory management, those scenarios. And construction is another area where in the recent days that I've seen this improvement, in the past 2 years, I've seen a lot of improvement there, uptake there. That's one reason is because construction is not a standalone one contractor business anymore. It's very widely distributed across multiple players. And there's a very well-established industry standards how, as to how a contractor deals with their supplier, a supplier deals with their vendor, those kind of things. So that workflow is very well defined. So this is just a quick overview of what Bistock Server is, why we would use Bistock Server, when we would use it, who are the others who are using it, and what are the scenarios that it addresses. So now let us take a quick look at how it does it. Like, let's say we'll be going through a scenario. Yep. So before we go into the demo, let me just quickly go through what's new in Bistock Server 2013. And this is a product that was released just about 2 months ago, March 2013, 2-3 months ago. And it's an improvement over the last version of Bistock 2010. So one of the tenets of this release is connectivity to the cloud. So why is it important and why is it relevant for an enterprise? So connectivity to the, when you take the term cloud itself in this case, we are talking about many of the SaaS applications. So SaaS application as software as a service. Think about a scenario like Salesforce or Azure services or Google Apps. Many of those individual services, like let's say if you just want to do credit card validation. So is it okay for you to go and write your own code for credit card validation or just subscribe to a service that does that? You just pass in a credit card number and it tells you whether it's a valid credit card or not. Or you want to do an address validation. There's a service already ready for that. So as part of your business process, you may want to just do an address validation. So you should be able to call into that service, pass in your parameter, get that address validated, and continue with your process, right? So the ability to connect to that cloud service, once again in a secured manner, and be able to access it from your business process and consume it as if it was part of your code. Same way, you should be able to expose your business process to some external endpoints. Like, let's say your partner has an application wherein he wants to consume one of your service. You may be hosting a service which says get orders. So your partner should be able to just call it like a regular web service, and you should be able to go back to your backend system, do your stuff, and return it back. So that connectivity to the cloud means both. That is, ability to expose your existing assets as well as consume existing SaaS assets. And the second part was improved performance. This is a continuous process. Improving performance is obviously a continuous process. But in this particular case, we focused on healthcare industry, as I was talking about with that MLLP adapter. And the next one was simplified experience. Simplified experience was to specific areas of within the product as an administrator or as a designer or as an architect. So we'll see that in one of the demos. And the last one was support for the latest platforms. Support for latest platform as in Bistock being an application broker sits at the very top of the application stack. It relies very heavily on capabilities of Windows Server and uses SQL Server not just as a data store but also as a data integrator. And it uses Visual Studio and .NET framework. So whenever there is a change in any one of these underlying infrastructure components, Bistock need to be revamped. So in this version of Bistock 2013, we use the latest version of Windows, which is Windows Server 2012, and SQL 2012, and .NET 4.5, and Visual Studio 2012. So this is an important aspect for most of you who manage IT, because Windows does not go through a yearly release, at least not so far. So most of the Windows servers, which was like, let's say, Windows 2003 or Windows 2008, which is the most predominant implementation currently, Windows 2003 is hitting a 10-year life cycle. So it is ending its life extended life support. Windows 2008 is also is hitting a 5-year life cycle. So it is completing its standard life support. So this is a cycle where most of the implementations of Windows and SQL, people will be updating. So if you're upgrading your Windows or SQL, you would need to make sure that you have the latest application stack on it. So you'll be upgrading to .NET Framework 4.5. So that's where you need a new version of Bistock. So every version of Bistock has that driving point as to support the latest platform. So this is a quick snapshot of what are all the various improvements that have gone into Windows 2013. So I think we covered most of them. So the demos that we will be seeing specifically today are around exposing as a REST service and consuming a REST service. We will see some of that thing. And one area that I want to really focus on is about the improved performance pillar. In the improved performance aspect, there are a couple of areas where Bistock 2013 stands out significantly, even when compared to 2010. As of last week, actually, we completed a lab for performance validation versus our own previous version, versus 2010. So there were some starking numbers there. with that last improvement there, which says XSL compile transform in maps, the magnitude of performance was almost in the order of around 20x. So on a similar solution, on a similar hardware, with compile transform in maps, we got about like 20 times performance. So the reason for that is in earlier versions of 2000, in earlier versions of BizTalk up to 2010, we were using XML 3.0, .NET Framework 3.0, which used a version of XSL called as XSLT, XSL Transform, wherein you are actually going through that transformation in real time and compiling and doing the transformation. If I have schema A, like let's say purchase order from my partner, and I want to transform it to my invoice in SAP, so that purchase order from my partner need to be transformed into a way that SAP can understand. So, and if you are doing it for like some 10,000 messages coming in, so you are doing this transformation for every single message. And if the transformation detail itself is not stored somewhere, you are actually interpreting it at runtime. That used to take a lot of CPU power. So on a hardware that used to take about 90% CPU, on that same hardware, now I can do it in like less than 30% CPU. So we will be publishing these numbers like in about a week or two. So this is the performance white paper. So the if nothing else, just by installing 2013, on a most common scenario, the map transformation is one of the most common scenario used in BizTalk. It's like more than 90% of the scenarios are transformation scenarios. All of those scenarios gain over 20x performance by just updating to 2013. So that's one major improvement. Another one is order delivery is a scenario where if you have, this is most common in terms of healthcare or claims processing or in banking and those scenarios, where you have to process those messages in the same sequence in which they came. So I cannot process a withdrawal order before I put a delivery deposit order. So those kind of things, I have to maintain it in a sequence. So the throughput of your messaging engine is significantly affected when the downstream system is slow. Like let's say if I have 10 systems that are going to process the same message, the ideal scenario is your hospital scenario. You go in and check in as a new patient. Some 10 downstream systems will be notified that a new patient has come in. So maybe all the way from a nursing station to a diagnostics, your doctors and your pharmacy, everybody will be notified that so-and-so new patient has been admitted. That new patient admission has to be notified to everybody in the same sequence. And everybody has to acknowledge that, hey, I have this new patient notification. So the next message that comes in as, okay, after the new patient registration, I want to go into screening. So if the new patient registration message did not get into, like, let's say, the diagnostics lab, and this patient goes for screening, they do not know what to do with this guy. So if the diagnostics lab was using a slower processing system, whatever that incoming rate it was doing, so now I cannot send the second message until that guy acknowledges that, yeah, I got this message. So the slowest downstream system will be the one determining how fast I am processing. So this is one scenario. There could be other scenarios where saying, hey, there are 10 people who are receiving. One guy is meant to be slow. It's okay for him to be slow. Don't block the other 9. Can you continue process sending messages to these other guys while that slow guy is still continuing to process? Hospital may not be the right scenario. An insurance company. Right? There are like 10 different departments or 10 different systems that need to handle a claim. But the other guys can continue to process the next message while they are blocked on this. Right? So there are two different scenarios. So in this particular order delivery improvement, that is one thing that we did, wherein we are not blocking one sender or one receiver just because the other guy is slow. So this was also a requirement that came from certain sections of the healthcare guys who said, like, okay, we don't need this kind of an order delivery requirement for some of these scenarios. And I think the last part, yes, this run in the cloud. So with the 2013, we created three different form factors of BizTalk. One is the on-prem server that has been around for a while. That is the server 2013. The second form factor of that, same thing is like, because BizTalk is a relatively large footprint product, being an integration product, it needs high availability of SQL Server, high availability of Windows Server, high availability of your Visual Studio environment. So it is a relatively large footprint product. So it used to take a while for customers to just get it installed, up and running, and configured, for somebody to just try it out as a trial basis also. So what we did here was using the Azure IaaS infrastructure, we have predefined images of Bistock, where you just go to Azure Gallery and say, hey, I need a new Bistock environment, and it's up and running literally in 3 minutes' time. So it's fully configured as in all of the underlying systems are already in place. Bistock is already installed, and you can choose to configure it or customize it for your particular use case. So you have access to a fully running environment in less than 3 minutes' time. So the scale of IaaS here, actually we have a talk later today at 10:15 by one of our MVPs who is presenting about how to scale on IaaS with Bistock. So the speciality of this IaaS environment is not only it is immediately available, you pay as you go. So you pay only for that part time of the day or week that you are using. And that is important because most of the time, like you might need an extra capability or extra capacity only for certain times of the year, like let's say end of the year, or if you are a tax consultant during the tax season. So you might just want that additional capacity during that time of the year, and you can pay only for those licenses rather than having redundant systems lying around. That's one big advantage I see for customers. And if you want to just stand up a new environment for, like, let's say, staging or testing your particular solution, and you don't have to invest on additional licenses for that, that's one scenario where I've seen IaaS being very heavily used. And the third form factor that we have introduced as of TechEd 2 weeks ago was the Windows Azure Bistock Services. That is some of the capabilities of Bistock Server, like the ability to do message processing, ability to do transformation, and a full-blown B2B environment. All of these things are available as a service on the cloud. So we have the server, we have the server available on IaaS as well as available as a service. So these are three different form factors which we announced with 2013. So now let's take a quick demo of a scenario wherein we will be exposing an existing business process designed in Bistock. So the scenario here is I have a SQL database, which has three tables, a customer's orders and equipment's table. So now I want to know what are all the equipments that are there in my equipment as in, like, let's say, inventory. Well, what are all the equipments that is available in my store? So I should be able to access it from my disconnected client, like, let's say, a Windows 8 client. So it is not running on the server. It is running on a completely different environment. But the backend database is sitting on a SQL server that is behind a firewall. I should be able to post a request from my Windows 8 client through a REST protocol and call a stored procedure on SQL Server, which returns me a data set, and be able to access it from my Windows 8 client. That is one scenario. Another scenario is I have a business process which says, okay, get all the orders related to one customer, or get all the customers related to this particular equipment, something like that. So there is a Bistock orchestration which exposes that backend database as a REST service. And we will also see how Bistock itself can consume it, assume it as a different application from Bistock which is consuming it. So we will see both of those things.
To switch.
So two and one,
huh? Two. Screen door.
Oh, it's two, right?
Yeah. One is
that's
mine.
One. Need to switch to two. Yeah, it came here, but not there. I need to switch to two. Okay, so this is a very simple Windows 8 client. All it does is it is connecting to, let me first show you that SQL Server that I have. Is that shown?
It's on, yeah.
Okay, so here I have a SQL table, which has select equipment from equipment list. So these are the various equipments I have, like CPU, GPU, hard drives, mouse, and keyboard, and those kind of stuff. So this is running on a completely different server behind a firewall. I want to be able to access this information from a Windows 8 client. So how do I go about doing that?
Yeah.
Okay. So here in my Windows 8 client, I'm going to enter the name of a product, let us say keyboard, and say go get all the details about that keyboard product. So it says, okay, I've got two different types of keyboard, one from Microsoft, one from Logitech. So it is hitting a REST service behind the scene. That REST service is calling a Bistock service running on-prem, and that Bistock service in turn is calling the SQL store procedure, getting the data back from SQL and exposing it as a REST data point. This is what happened behind the scene. So I'll show you how we do that going about. So let's see. Can you just add a new
keyboard?
Yeah, just add a new column, new data.
I'm just going to add a new keyboard.
EORD, some new num number. And you already have one Logitech. Make it like Dell or somebody. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now if I go and query again, I should see three orders. Keyboards, B-O-A-R-D-S. And we're spending 0030 port. 0030. Okay, UI, BYRD keyboard. Yeah. So we will also see how we are defining it in Bistock. And we will also see how to consume it from Bistock itself. Rather than a Windows 8 client, we will see how to consume it from Bistock itself. So what I have in SQL Server here is I have these three stored procedures. If you see this, So here I have three stored procedures called get customer by equipment ID, get equipment, and get equipment by customer ID. So these are the three stored procs that I have on SQL, which is returning me this data. So the one that I called in this particular example was get equipment. I passed equipment ID, and it returned me that equipment relating to that ID. So now we will call the other one, customer equipment ID, or get equipment by customer ID from Bistock. So let's open up Bistock orchestration. So this is the orchestration designer that I was talking about, which is a graphical representation of your business flow. If you look at this, here I have actually two orchestrations, which this is intentionally made as two orchestrations for the purpose of explaining here. But if you look at on the very far right, I have something called as a port where I'm exposing two different endpoints, get customer by equipment, get equipment by customer. Both of those things can be exposed within the same orchestration. But just for simplicity's sake, I've made it as two orchestrations, which is just a duplicate of this. So here, I'm receiving that incoming request. The first step is receiving that equipment ID request. And then I'm constructing that message as to the way that SQL understands. So basically, I'm transforming that message. And then I'm sending that request to SQL and getting the response back from SQL. So if you look at this, it's a graphical representation of what that transaction happens. I'm getting a web request, which says, OK, tell me what kind of equipment you want, what is the parameter that you want to go to pass. That is not exactly the same way that SQL is expecting. So I have to transform that message into a way that SQL expects, that SQL store procedure expects, and send that request to SQL, and get that response from SQL, and send that response back to my my web request. So here there was no coding involved. Right? So it was a very graphical representation of this. So once I have it designed in orchestration, I can go through a wizard in Bistock, which publishes it as a REST endpoint. So now let's go to Internet Explorer on that same box and say, this is the endpoint on which, if you look at it, the address says it's a HTTP localhost. So this is on the Bistock box. I am hitting the REST service to say, OK, return me everything that is for equipment number 6. Return me all the customers. So if I change that equipment ID to something else, like let's say 4, for instance, it will be returning me the parameters for, So it returns me a different set of customers for that particular thing. So this is one store proc. So the other store proc, if you go to that, it is the opposite of it. Return me all the customers for a given equipment, right? So so this is the equipment ID, let's say CPU or something like that. Yeah, for or return me all the equipment for a given customer. Yeah. Customer ID is 3. It returns me all these are the various equipment for this so-and-so customer. So now that store procedure that I had in SQL is now available to me as a REST endpoint. We did not have to write a single line of code. So now how do I, let's assume that such an endpoint exists. For a while, let's assume that this is my partner service. How do I consume it in Bistock? Once again, we want to make sure that it is a zero code. We don't want to be writing a whole lot of REST code or Visual Basic code or C# code or anything. How do I consume this in Bistock without writing a single line of code? So let's open up Bistock admin console. So this is the administrative console for Bistock server, wherein I can create a new application called as send to REST is one scenario, that name of the application that I have. So there I define a new send port. Within the send port, I can say this is a new adapter that we have in Bistock 2013 called the Web HTTP adapter, which allows you to communicate using REST protocol. So here I need to specify what is the URL that I'm trying to hit. I can copy paste that same URL that I had in IE, where I was hitting that HTTP localhost or whatever. I can copy paste that and say, hey, this is the URL that I have from my partner, and I want to pass a specific parameter. But in this particular case, all I want to do is just a GET. Right? I'm not posting anything. I am just doing a GET. But Bistock being a messaging broker, it says, yeah, I need to know the message that you are dealing with. Right? So, but because it is REST, I'm going to explicitly tell Bistock that, hey, don't worry about any message that you'll be getting here. I want you to truncate anything that goes out. So I'm going to post a trigger message, a dummy message, to tell Bistock, go ahead and make this call. But don't worry about what's in the inside the message. Right? So I want to explicitly tell Bistock, go ahead and truncate that. So I can specify the verbs for which I want to truncate that message. And if you look at the trigger message itself, all it is just a dummy message. It is just a dummy message. It doesn't mean anything. The reason why I want the dummy message is like, how am I going to simulate that request? Right? So because this is a demo, I just want to simulate that request. Usually in a business process, you'll not be using a dummy message. The business process is making a request, or somebody is simulating that request. In this case, I'm simulating this request by just posting something and telling Bistock, don't worry about what I posted, and just get me that response. So Bistock posted it to that local host. From local host, it went ahead through, went through that orchestration. Orchestration said, okay, I got this web request. I'm going to post it to SQL, get the response back from SQL, and send you back that response as a REST message. So this is the REST message response that we got for that particular post that we did. So here, I could do a REST request response without writing a single line of code. And the business process that I am exposing is a fairly simple scenario, but it conveys quite a lot of messages. And like, I can replace that SQL store procedures with my SAP system. I can replace my business orchestration with business rules in that. I can make that process as complex as I want, and still make available only those particular operations which I want a user to do. Right? Say, for instance, in this case, I'm directly calling a store procedure called get equipment by customer ID. Imagine a scenario where I don't have such a store procedure. That means I'm actually constructing that message within my business process and making that available as an operation to an end user. Right? So I can not only call it, I can also expose it. And as I expose it, I can choose to define what part of my business process I want to expose. And same way, while I'm consuming, I can choose to consume the specific aspects of the business process that I want to consume. Right? So this is possible with a new adapter called Web HTTP adapter. And there's a lot more you can do with that Web HTTP adapter. If you go to the configure, there is something called as URL mapping. Yeah. So that where I just posted it as HTTP. No, go to the URL mapping. Yeah. So I can actually post that entire thing, whatever the operation name that I want. So I can say that call this particular operation and pass this specific parameter. I can call that whole thing. So instead of passing that local host as a specific parameter like customer 2, I can pass that customer 2 as a parameter in my incoming message. So I can get different types of requests going in through that my trigger message itself. So we have an excellent video talking about this sometime back, I did it about a month ago. It's available on MSDN, so where we talk about how to use Web HTTP adapter. So then the next scenario that I would like to touch upon is about connectivity to Office 365. This is an adapter that we have had with BizTalk for a long time called SharePoint adapter. In the earlier versions of SharePoint, they used to have something called as an object model for the server object model. That means you need to know about the server to which you are connecting. So if I'm connecting to SharePoint form from BizTalk being just a client, I need to know what kind of authentication I need to pass and what kind of protocol that the SharePoint server is using and those kind of stuff. So the connectivity library was server-based. So if you are running a SharePoint, if you were running a SharePoint form, like let's say generally some 8 or 10 servers, and you have a BizTalk form, which is generally like some 3 or 4 servers, it was kind of a nightmare for the administrator to go and implement this library on every one of those servers. And whenever there was an update or a hot fix or a cumulative update or something like that, they had to go to multiple teams. Usually SharePoint is managed by a different team, BizTalk is managed by a different team, SQL is managed by a different team of engineers. So you had to coordinate them all. But in SharePoint 2012 and above, the SharePoint team actually came back with a client library, where they say, just use the client object model and you install it on every one of the clients that you are talking to, and you really don't have to worry about the type of server you are connecting. So this kind of opened up the opportunity to connect to SharePoint Online, because now that I don't have to know what type of server I'm connecting to, and I don't have to worry about whether SharePoint is hosted on-prem or online or hosted by somebody else as a third-party provider, I don't have to worry about that. All I need to provide is the SharePoint URL, the username, password, and I can connect to SharePoint server. So this suddenly opens up a lot of opportunities for business processes, especially with Office 365 in place. So if you are an Office 365 customer, what does SharePoint provide you? SharePoint provides you a human interaction workflow. That means, let's say if you have to go through an approval process. So somebody raised an invoice for $10,000, and it needs to be approved by an appropriate authority. So that authority needs to be notified. So if he's on SharePoint, he gets an email or he gets a notification saying that, hey, you have something to be approved. So there can be a little workflow within SharePoint where he can click on approve, and it comes back as another message back to BizTalk to continue its job. So now I don't have to worry about where is this approving authority located. He can be on-prem, he can be sitting from home, or he can be sitting on an airplane. As long as he can access Office 365, he can access my business process. Right? So all that BizTalk needs to do is post to SharePoint and get back a response from SharePoint. That's all right. So here we will see a simple scenario where I'm posting some document, so some Hello World document, into BizTalk. And all that I have in BizTalk is a regular send port. I do not have an orchestration. I do not have any such thing. All I have is a simple send port where I define the URL for my SharePoint Online. And I can see it on my SharePoint Online portal. So this is the one that came a few seconds ago, right?
Yeah.
So now let's go back to that BizTalk configuration. Look at that send port. So here I'm just defining the URL for my SharePoint Online, and just define my what is the destination folder that I want to have, and it go identifies my destination folder on my team sites and uploads the document. So this is part of that simplified experience theme that I was talking about while introducing this talk. So we have made these are very simple. It looks very simple, but there's a lot of use cases behind this. You think you can just post to SharePoint, what's the big deal? But SharePoint is meant to be a human interaction service, right? So posting to SharePoint by a human is a very different thing than an application posting to SharePoint. Right? When an application, let's say a business process that is running on SAP wants to post something to SharePoint, and a human is just approving something, or denying something or taking a human intervention action on that. So that means now you are pretty much acting on behalf of your SAP workflow and not just as a SharePoint workflow, right? So that is where this middleware makes it possible. The ability to connect to SharePoint online makes a big deal there. The other important aspect of Microsoft Integration Services is about a new product or a new technology called Service Bus. You might have heard about it in multiple scenarios, but Service Bus is a technology that is owned by our same team. So it's not an alien technology or it's not an outside technology or anything. It's owned by the same team that owns BizTalk Server. So what we do there, if you look at it, many of you may be familiar with some queuing technologies, be it MSMQ or be it IBM MQ series or be it RabbitMQ, many of these queuing technologies. In a typical messaging pattern, there are two or three ways of doing things. One is like I receive a message, I'm receiving an incoming request, like let's say a purchase order, and I need to send it to my downstream system. That means synchronously I'm doing that processing. That means the downstream system is expected to be available when this incoming request comes in. And I'm expecting that incoming request in the same format that the downstream system is expecting. That means I don't have to change the data in any form. I don't have to worry about modifying the data in any form. I'm just getting it like this, sending it to the downstream system. So there, all you need to do is just relay the incoming request to the downstream system, get the response back, and send it out. So that is called a relay service. The second scenario, I have a downstream system which may or may not be available at the same time as I get the request. But I cannot afford to lose the request either. It's an incoming order. I don't want to lose it. So I'm going to queue up all the incoming requests. And the downstream system, whenever he's available, he's going to come and pick it up from the queue. Right? So that's a standard queue pattern. I can send any number of messages into the queue. And anybody can send messages to that queue through some authentication. And the downstream system can choose to go and pick it up as and when it's available. So these are two different patterns. One is synchronous and the asynchronous. And in the queue pattern, we went one more step further and called it as saying, okay, now that I received a message, like let's say I have one queue which could receive orders for item A, item B, item C, item D. But instead of putting it all as one big orders queue, I want to put it as order 1 queue, order 2 queue, order 3 queue, or order 4 queue. Right? For each item, I want to create it as different things. So the customer will be posting to one endpoint. Service bus will divide it into four different endpoints. So why should we do that? It allows us four different applications to consume. Right? Because queue by nature is first in, first out. Right? So if there is order 1, order 2, order 3, and then order 1, order 2, order 3, and then order 4, order 4, order 4. Right? So if there are two or three different applications who are processing these orders, so the order 4 applications will be just stuck because order 1, 2, 3 has not been processed yet. So these order 1, 2, 3 are for different items. So they could have been processed by different applications. So how do I make sure that order 4 continues to go even though order 1 and 2 are waiting? So that is where you want to put it into a different queue. So that concept is called topics and subscriptions. Right? So I put it into one topic and there are different subscribers, like order 4 queue is one subscriber, order 3 queue is another subscriber, so it goes to different levels. So then from there, some downstream system can come and process. So this is service bus at a very high level. It has a queue, it has topics and subscriptions, and it has a relay capability. By itself, it is a foundational technology. It is not a server product like BizTalk. It is not a product that you can just take it and run away. It is a developer tool. Right? It's a foundational technology that makes so many things possible because it allows this kind of a messaging protocol to be used by everybody. So now, how does BizTalk make use of this? BizTalk has an adapter natively built called Service Bus Adapter with which it can communicate not just with Service Bus in terms of queues but also as topics and subscriptions and also with Relay. So now, imagine a scenario where I am receiving through an FTP order or something, I receive some 100,000 records. So all the 100,000 records need not be processed by my downstream system right away. My downstream system could be like, let's say, an SAP system which is available only between 5 and 7 in the evening. So my FTP is sending it through the night or through the day or something. So I want to be receiving these orders as they come in. And as it comes in, I want to split it into 4 or 5 different individual queues. And as and when my SAP system is available, my BizTalk server will go and receive from this queue and start processing. So my BizTalk server is not overloaded, and I am not losing these orders either. So yes, service bus becomes the endpoint for receiving these incoming requests and use it as a store and forward mechanism. So this pattern is called store and forward. So if you look at service bus, let's learn, there is a tool called Service Bus Explorer. So I have a simple scenario called I have 4 electronic manufacturers, Dell, Hitachi, Philips, and Sony. And if you look at every one of them, if you expand on Dell, for instance, So here I have a rule which says if the manufacturer's name is Dell, put it into this queue. So I have a rule like this for every one of them. If the manufacturer's name is Sony, put it into the Sony queue. Manufacturer's name is Philips, put it into the Philips queue. And finally, I have a catch-all queue which says if you give me a random manufacturer, like let's say manufacturer name is GE, for which I don't have a queue, put it in that catch-all bucket where it takes every message. So now all that I'm doing here is from BizTalk, I'm posting a message to service bus, and that posting 4 different types of messages. So there is one is a manufacturer for Dell or Philips or any such thing. Let's look at that message sample. So here I have a value called manufacturer equals Dell. And in BizTalk, I'm promoting this property to service bus, telling that, okay, look for this value, right? So that is called as brokered messaging. So in BizTalk has always had this concept of promoter properties, which means look for a value in your incoming data, and based on certain values for that, do a contextual routing, right? If this value equals Dell, do something. If it is equal to Philips, do something. If it is Sony, do something, right? So I'm going to look into this data and act on that. So that is called as promoter properties. So the same concept works in service bus also. That means whatever property that BizTalk promotes, service bus will honor that. So service bus will see that incoming value as Dell and say, I'm going to put it into the Dell queue, right? So think of this as 2 different partners, who is one is sending in data and it stores in service bus. And then there is another partner, another downstream application, which is also in this case BizTalk, which is receiving from that and sending it to a downstream system. So these are 2 parts. So first let's push some 4 different types of messages. One is Dell, another one is Hitachi, third one is Philips and Sony. So if you go into, click on cancel here. Yep. Refresh. So it says there is a new message that arrived in Dell. Click on messages. Okay, receive. So this was the message that we sent from BizTalk server. So now I can send like some hundreds of thousands of messages, and they all will be just accumulating on the service bus queue, right? So this is a very important aspect because this is a very common scenario where BizTalk will be receiving at a very high rate from an upstream system, and the downstream system may not be available. And you don't want to lose these messages, right? So by putting it into a service bus queue and putting it especially under a different topic, we can now not only just receive those messages, I can actually classify those messages for different applications. So the example is a very simple example, but provides a very, very powerful concept, the store and forward concept. So now if I just enable these receive locations from BizTalk, it is going to receive those messages from that service bus queue and put it into a folder on BizTalk. So on BizTalk side, it could be a folder or your downstream ERP system or SQL system. So in this case, it just put it into an outbound folder. All right. So we looked at quite a lot of concepts in this case. So we had a quick introduction to what BizTalk server is. We had a quick introduction to why to use BizTalk and how to use BizTalk, when to use BizTalk. And we also had a quick glimpse of what's new in BizTalk server. And we saw a couple of scenarios where we saw the latest newer adapters being used, web HTTP adapter, the SharePoint adapter, and the service bus adapter. And we also learned a little bit about the performance improvement in BizTalk server. And being a server product, especially an integration server product at that, it's very important for BizTalk to have a very vibrant partner ecosystem. And why is it important is because as a generic platform, it provides a lot of those schemas, it provides a lot of those templates and those kind of things. But at the end of the day, you need some domain expert who comes in and can deploy it for your particular scenario. So the partner ecosystem is a very vibrant one that is very relevant to BizTalk Server. And I'm quite proud to see that because in the past 10 plus years, we have had some very loyal partners who have been with the product for a very long time. And they have built very successful business around that. And for today's, I have a partner on stage, Saravana, who runs his own company called BizTalk 360, wherein they have developed a product called for monitoring BizTalk server across scale, across multiple servers through over IaaS and over behind the firewall scenarios. So I wanted to introduce him today because most of his clientele is out of Europe. So they are based out of London. And we have in our North America TechEd session, we had another partner who was talking about how they implemented BizTalk as an ESB, as an enterprise service bus. So there are quite a lot of these various different partners who have created these various partner solutions on top of the server product. So let me allow Saravanan to talk a little bit about BizTalk 360.
Can you switch it to slide?
Slide 4, is it? Yeah. You move further. I'll get you back. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. My name is Saravana Kumar, as Guru mentioned. I'm the founder of BizTalk 360. I know some of our customers are here in the audience. One of the key objectives for us is to build an operational admin and monitoring tool on top of the rich platform already provided by BizTalk Server. So we take care of things like, okay, BizTalk is a complex product, like, and there will be a problem in getting the skill set, or you are a technical developer audience, and you don't want to basically go and support your application. So what we do are things like ability to provide like a non-BizTalk people to go and support your BizTalk application. So you can easily train some .NET person to go and support your BizTalk application. So we provide various dashboards, various monitoring tools, and higher level security, those kind of things. And we also do things like governance auditing. So if you wanted to know who did what in your environment, like who stopped that send port or who started that receive location, those kind of things, we take care of that as well. And in terms of security, like being a middleware product, like most of the time, it's not just BizTalk. You'll be using various other tools like SQL Server, Performance Monitor, Message Box Viewer, like 7 or 8 different tools. So we just consolidate everything into one single place. And you can provide security, and you can have governance auditing, everything in a single location. And also we got this ability to share your environment. So BizTalk, once you invested something in like BizTalk, you wanted to make sure, like, you make most out of the platform, so we provide opportunity to share your environment easily. And the final thing is we also do cover monitoring aspects. So being a middleware platform, it's important you make sure it's all up and running in a healthy way. So it's basically like an all-in-all package, which allows you the ability to operate, administer, and support it in a much more efficient way. I think we are running out of time here, so just allow Guru to finish off the session. Yeah.
Thanks, Ronald. So the key takeaways that we had was that integration platform from Microsoft that helps you to take your enterprise to the cloud, so you can move it on your own terms. You don't have to worry about, like, hey, what is this cloud thing about? So you can connect to the cloud, or you can consume that cloud application without changing anything in your enterprise application. And it's a config-driven environment. It's not a whole lot of coding. And there is a role for the IT administrator. There is a role for the CTO, CXO level people who make business decisions. And there is a role for the developer to define all of those workflows. And then it's a mission-critical application wherein it goes very deep into your enterprise data, and it connects with a variety of enterprise data sources. So it is highly available, reliable, and scalable. So that's pretty much the key takeaway that I have. And I request you to please go ahead and fill in the eval when you have a chance. and these are the related contents. So there is a next session that is immediately following now, is BizTalk Server in Windows Azure IaaS, and there is also a session on Introduction to Azure BizTalk Services, both of them starting in the next 15 minutes, I guess, 15, 20 minutes. And today evening, we also have a session on B2B collaboration on the cloud, how you do B2B and EDA completely on the cloud. And today, we will also be introducing EDIFACT in the cloud. Today, tomorrow morning, we have a session on Microsoft Integration Vision and Roadmap. And Friday, we also have a session on building hybrid solutions using BizTalk Server and Service Bus. So I urge you all to please go ahead and fill in the evaluation. And thank you all for coming. I'm sorry that we ran out of time for Q&A, and I will be available here if you have any specific Q&As. Thank you.